All right, welcome everybody. This is the Thursday, May 21st, 2009 Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting, and we'll call ourselves to order. And I'd like to get a roll call. Mr. Benedict.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Gehring. Ms. Dean?
Here.
Mr. Ehring?
Here.
Mr. Myers?
Here.
Mr. Costello?
Here.
Mr. Gehring?
Yes, I'm here.
Mr. Wallace?
Here.
And Mr. Reynolds? We have a quorum. Mr. Reynolds, the only one absent.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Benedict. And this is the time for public comment. I see a number of people in the audience. This is the time to comment on anything that is not on the agenda. If something's on the agenda that you want to talk about, then you'll get some opportunity to speak then. But for things not on the agenda, please step forward and give us your thoughts. Seeing none, we'll close that part of the meeting. And we are at item three, nomination of new chairperson and vice chairperson. So we are going to throw the nomination open to the floor and see what comes up.
Well, I'd like to see you continue if you're willing to do that. I think you've made a very good chair. And if not you, then Mr. Costello, because he's the
I'll second the nomination. Of
Well, that
Mr.
was
Mr. Gehring.
There might be a railroad going through.
I think Mr. Gehring's done an outstanding job, and I'd recommend that we keep him alive.
Thank you.
I second the motion.
And I concur. Yes.
So how about any other nominations? We're not going to have a
Well, then I would move that the nominations be closed.
All right. We have a motion and a second. any other comment or discussion on that motion? Seeing none, I guess we'll just by acclamation conclude that Mr. Costello and I are stuck again.
Oh, wait a minute. We only did the chairman.
Oh, I thought that was for vice. I thought you were vice chair, Mr. Costello. Wait a minute. Who made that motion?
Well, I made the motion. I said, if not you, then Mr. Costello. But a possibility that Joe could just tag along. We could vote on both of you together.
So they're.
And I would amend my motion to include that if the second would.
I would, if he didn't want a second, I'll second it for
him. Well, I'll second it for convenience.
Okay. All right. Let's just go ahead and all in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
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 Are there any opposed? Well, there definitely was a railroad going through. But that said, by the way, Mr. Benedict, have we heard anything about Tom Reynolds, what his physical condition is? How is he doing?
No, I spoke with him about a month ago. I haven't talked to him since then, so I don't know any have any update.
All right. Any other committee member get a chance to talk to Tom and see how he's doing? All right. All right. Minutes of March 19, 2009. Does everyone have a chance to look at that? We'll give you a minute to get your thoughts together.
You have some corrections?
No.
I would make a motion then that we accept the minutes.
I would second the motion.
I guess it's March 19th.
Yes.
Okay, motion second. Any discussion on that? Anybody got anything at all?
I'd like to abstain, Mr. Chairman. I wasn't here at that meeting.
All right, thank you. All right, all in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Mr. Benedict, looks like we're to the Quagga Mussel Boat Inspection Update.
Yes, just there is an attachment in your agenda that provides a summary of the latest month or months, generally depending on how we accumulate the information from the Parks Department regarding the monitoring that we're doing at Lopez Lake, Salinas, which is Santa Margarita Lake, the Whale Rock in Cayucas, Nacimiento, San Antonio, and Lake Cachuma. And we do monthly inspections or bi-monthly inspections, depending on location, access, that type of thing. And we've had no positive confirmations of any quagga mussels in any of these reservoirs to date.
Now, Dean, quick question. I understand that we're being very perseverant in inspecting the boats, and that's great, and I think we should continue. But are we seeing any other signs of any other incursions of the quagga mussel in any of our waterways nearby?
Well, Kachuma would be the closest, and I'm not aware of any massive migration currently. I will note that, well, maybe I should wait just a second until I finish your question, but no, we're not seeing any massive migrations or any specific large problems that are occurring. I don't know. John, are you seeing anything? No. No, we have a couple of staff members that are in contact weekly with the State Fish and Game, and they're in contact with Metropolitan Water District, who has a staff now of people investigating what to do with quagga mussels, and we're not seeing a lot of problems with that developing anywhere else.
So far, so good.
Yes.
Thank you.
I would like to note, as some of you may know, we are doing a quagga mussel infestation response plan, and the purpose of that plan is to have a sort of a semi-urgent path of action if we were to find mussels in one of the reservoirs. And we've contracted with Dennis Delzite, a former member of some of these groups, to prepare that study for us. The study is being funded partly by Zone 3, basically half by Zone 3 and half by the city of San Luis Obispo. And the study is covering Santa Margarita Lake and Lopez Lake. And the purpose of it is to say, if we get mussels, here's what we need to do. We already know what the facilities are we have. Here's our immediate response. Here's what we have to do as far as budgeting. Here's options that we won't do, like we're not going to drain the lakes. Here's some chemical ideas that have worked or may work or in process, so we don't have to kind of start that all up from zero. That's the purpose of the study. We did get, in some additional thinking and communications on it, initially we contacted the county of Monterey to try to ask them to be involved with Nacimiento Lake, which, as you know, is going to provide water to San Luis County. And they had no funding, and they were interested, but they had no funding to participate. Since then, we've thought that through a little bit further, and the Nacimiento Commission has allocated $25,000 to add to that study. So we will be amending the partially developed study to include Lake Nacimiento also from the perspective, as I said, of if we have an infestation, what can we do? That's a little bit messier because, as you know, Lake Nacimiento, the property around it, is owned by Monterey County, and we have access to the water, but we don't run the lake, so it's a little bit more difficult. But we wanted to incorporate that into the study, so we had, well, obviously the likelihood is probably a lot more that would be the first lake in the area that would end up being infested because we don't have the same controls up there that we do with Santa Margarita and Lopez Lake and even Kachuma. So we've incorporated that, and I will bring that draft to you and have that available to you when we get to that point, which probably will be we're going to have an administrative draft, review that internally, and then release that for public comment. So I would imagine it would be by the next meeting. If not, would be between the next meeting and the second meeting, which would be a couple of months from now.
All right, Mr. Benedict, thank you for that. And anything else, Mrs. Dean?
No.
Mr. Wallace.
Sorry, Dean, just a question on Nacimiento. Given that there's a number of private boat clubs there, will the response plan address the private boat clubs as well as the public boat launches?
Their response plan is not intended to address how we keep the mussels out or control the property access to the lake. It's what happens if the mussels are in the lake. I will mention, since you brought up another good point, we are trying to arrange a meeting with a couple of the members of the County Board of Supervisors in Monterey County and some of the staff to sit down and go over the issues of what are they doing, what's Monterey County Water Agency and Monterey County doing to protect the lake or to at least advise people, and how can we help, San Luis County can help. Pablo Ogren, the Public Works Director, has met with one of the staff department's heads of Monterey County, We try to hash through some issues that are peripheral and not really related to the quagga mussels, but they're related to land use policy. And Monterey County has several other issues that they want to talk about in relationship to that, and it kind of muddles up the whole process. So we're trying to focus it. But suffice it to say, hopefully within the next month, we'll have a meeting and at least kick that off and try to encourage them more to at least get their public education program a lot more intensive than it is right now.
We once had a client that had property on Nacia Meadow, and I mean, he was a private individual. He went through 2-3 miles of dirt road to get to his place, and he had a boat ramp, and he launched his boat.
Sure. So, a number of those.
So that's potential trouble. So did that discussion raise anything else on the committee's part?
Well, right. Only that Heritage Ranch, why wouldn't they do something? I mean, I think we ought to approach them. They're a big development there, and basically they all launch from pretty much the same area.
Well, I think the main problem is that there is one launch ramp for the public. There may be two. I'm not sure. I think there's one. But all of the surrounding properties have private access to the lake, and that's wherein the problem is that how do you control all those individual property owners that have direct access without any control to the lake? That's the issue. That's the main concern that we have.
You encourage them to help, to have some sort of campaign.
Yes.
To try to encourage them to, because it's important to all boat people, and it's important to all people who are using that water that we don't get any of these mussels in any of these lakes.
Question, is there a liability issue? And if so, what liability lies with these people should there be a quagga mussel incursion into the lake? And it came via their use of the waterways. Are they responsible financially or legally? Or is there any relationship there?
No. To date, there's been no connection tied to somebody bringing a mussel into a lake and creating an infestation and them being financially responsible or otherwise. We're not aware of anything back east where this is a common occurrence and infestation where they have gone after anybody similar to somebody who sets a fire, you know, a land fire or whatever. It's the problem of the owner of the facility after it's there. That's the way it's been as far as we're aware.
Do any of these property owners that use the lake for recreational purposes, do they depend on that lake for their water source? Do they get their drinking water there also?
Yes, the some of the lake participants or the owners around the lake do draw from that, maybe not directly from the lake, but I believe through wells. Heritage Ranch does also through underground water source, which is replenished by the lake, if you will.
Would that underwater ground source be contaminated by quagga mussels that hit the lake? And if so, I'm trying to see if there's a connection that if problems come to the lake, that even though they may not be legally responsible, they're going to end up being fiscally responsible anyway because they're going to have to deal with their water source.
Well, I think the amount of water that those users have available to them is pretty minuscule compared to, for example, what San Luis County would take, the 17,000 acre feet that the county has reserved per year. Heritage Ranch has 200 acre feet. Do you know, John?
1,100.
It's 1,100? Okay. It's not a lot compared to some of the other. And, of course, Monterey County doesn't use the water for any potable purposes. So, in effect, the problem with the quagga mussels is one that they do disturb or change. They're an invasive species, and they do change the character of the fish, the water quality in the lake itself. Now, I don't know, any of you weren't at, we had a meeting with the city of San Luis Obispo, and there was a agency, I believe, in Michigan that on Lake Erie, and I'm not really good at geography, so I probably already forgot, but it was one of the Great Lakes, and they've been operating this problem for about 35 years. And basically, to them, it's just like one other thing. You know, it's like it rains, they get dirty water. Well, they just have quagga mussels, and they can't even separate the costs of treating the water for the quagga mussels versus treating the water for water treatment purposes. So I guess what I'm saying is that, yeah, it may affect the quality of the water in the lake. To what extent, I'm not sure we even know. It mostly just impacts the intake equipment and facilities where you got to go in there and do more maintenance to knock the things off. I'm not aware that they get into the system and they start, you know, normally all systems intakes have screens, and that's where they bottle up and they congregate and they block the screens, and that's where it has to be taken off. So screens are replaced. But this particular agency used chlorine to kill the mussels as they came into this 3-mile pipeline. That's just what they did. And they said, well, the chlorine effectively helps our treatment process because it's pre-treatment in the pipeline. So it's kind of combined. So it changes the fish habitat. I guess the mussels eat some of the food in the water that the fish eat. And beyond that, I'm not sure how, you know, depending on the size of the lake, would be the impact that they would have.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
That brings to mind a real question that I don't know the answer to. Maybe you do. And that is, you get used direct source water without any processing whatsoever that goes into the stream out of Nacimiento, and it goes into the river, and it's being used all the way through Monterey County for agriculture. Do these mussels start jamming up water systems that are...
We haven't heard. I mean, effectively, if the water goes through the groundwater, you have a filtration process there in itself. We sort of alluded to that when we had a conversation in the Metropolitan Water District of Los Angeles was talking about them being in the aqueduct and any of the rivers. And nobody has brought up anything that I'm aware of their impact in the rivers themselves or subsequently going through groundwater and coming up in the wells. We haven't heard anything about that. Again, other than the equipment where the intakes might be. So if it's in a stream or a creek or a river, we're not seeing impact to that we're aware of.
Okay, thank you for that. And anything else for Mr. Benedict on the quagga mussel issue? Anybody? No? All right. I think we're still with you, Mr. Benedict, on the operations report.
Yes. I wanted to let you know a little bit about what's going on up at the plant. The plant is pretty stable right now as far as the operations go. For Mr. Meyer's benefit, we have had the new plant online about 2 years now. For the first year, we had a lot of instability in a lot of locations because we just did the upgrade and we started the new membrane plant, and the plant was all automated. And it wasn't the kind of plant that you had a remote and you put your feet up on the desk and just watch everything electronically work by itself, much to the surprise maybe of some of our operators. They've been working really hard at trying to stabilize the plant. We have some new chemicals that we use, and the processing is a tremendous learning curve as far as the education. It's probably like going from doing thing on a typewriter to taking your typewriter away and giving you a laptop and saying you're going to work on this now and you got to learn it in a week. That's kind of what they've been doing out there at the plant, plus maintaining things and operating things. The plant is, as I said, very stable. I'm still concerned about some things, about the chlorine dioxide system, how it's operating. We continue to have failures in that. And our subcontractor, DuPont, keeps coming out and trying to tinker with things and make things better. I'll try to save a couple of things for the plant upgrade update so I can give you some information on that. We're down to a lake capacity, I believe, about 56% right now. I don't have the specifics about the production by the plant. I think we're around 4 million gallons per day and still receiving and distributing state water along with that Lopez water. I think I'll leave some of the other items for later. We're going to talk about some efficiency investigation and monitoring that we're going to be doing. But the plant report, the algae is not a problem, odor is not a problem. We're using the chemical, basically most all the chemicals that the plant was designed to use. And I say that because we went from a chlorine disinfectant plant to a chlorine dioxide disinfectant plant. And our designer had some ideas of what kind of chemicals we used for pretreatment and primary treatment and how that was all going to work. And we've been having a real difficult time making the plant work that way. Our staff's been very diligent and very aggressive about trying to make that work as it was envisioned in the Black & Veatch design concept and as things have been going on. But I think we're getting much, much more stable. I think we're seeing costs being reduced, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on. The operations are going well. We're down to we started the plant up with a 24-hour per day manned operation. We are now down to a 10-hour per day manned operation, which is 2 years ago I couldn't have imagined being down to only a 10-hour per day manned operation. But we've been able to adjust the plant, adjust the alarms, change specific processes in the plant whereby when the membrane does things, for example, like do back washes, we don't do those when there's somebody that's not there because something usually will go wrong during that time. So we try to make sure that the things that have to happen, they happen when the staff is there so we don't have callbacks and extra labor time out there. So I think our staff is doing an excellent job out there for you and for all of us. That's the end of my report.
Okay, thank you for that. And any questions for Mr. Benedicts on the operations report? No? Well, I've got one. Looking at the, Mr. Benedict, looking at this report, the Lopez water delivery report.
Yes.
For March of 2009, that's the end of the water year as far as we're concerned.
For Lopez water, yes.
Right. And I'm noticing that CSA 12 didn't use all of their entitlement. They're short by about 90 acre feet. And we had a couple of other agencies go over by a little bit. But in round numbers, it looks like we've got 70, 80 acre feet or so of water that was not used in terms of the total entitlement for all the agencies. And I'm kind of wondering what the disposition of that water and whether that is maybe going to segue us into the surplus water issue.
Well, it doesn't, because the next item is on the agenda will be discussing a declaration of surplus water, but surplus water is only available or designated as such if we have less than the total safe yield that's utilized. And the safe yield includes both the contract deliveries and the environmental deliveries, along with the aspect of spillage from the dam. So That's a segue into no, there is no surplus water.
Okay. Did that generate any other questions on the operations issue from the committee?
I have another question.
Yes, Mrs. Dean.
Black & Veatch was going to come up with some cost-cutting measures or some plan for cost-cutting. Have they done anything in that arena?
I don't recall us asking Black & Veatch to do that.
I thought I had that in my notes from last time. No?
Doug, do you recall that? No, we have all but fired Black & Veatch.
Okay.
And are not even communicating with them at all on anything to help us out because of some poor response we've had. We have other people trying to do that, but
okay.
Not Black & Veatch.
Not them. Okay.
We will probably discuss that if that's one of the items in the sort of an audit of the plant that we want to do with the members of the TAC and the advisory committee and the staff of some of the agencies. So maybe that is what you're referring to.
I think it was the Black & Veatch. I thought I had something written down about a plan. And also I wanted to ask about the Paul Membrane Performance Report. Has that come through?
Yes, thank you. The Paul Membrane Report and what Ms. Dean is referring to is the Paul Corporation is the company that furnished the membrane equipment. That's basically the microfiltration equipment, which is what filters, does the primary filtration of the water after other processes. And that was a $2 million contract that was directly with the Flood Control District. They provided that. They bid against other companies, and what they had to do included in their bid was to prove that their base bid for furnishing the equipment plus the chemical usage for a year plus the power usage for a year did not exceed a certain amount that they bid on, because otherwise they could have tried to undercut somebody else by saying how well their equipment performed. They were required to do a performance test, which was a 45-day test, which we measured lots of energy, chemical usage, flows were monitored, and one of the racks was maintained at a maximum level, which was a design level. That report was sent in November, and they said basically everything was great. I sent that to Black & Veatch. Black & Veatch looked at it and said, well, they concurred with everything except two issues, and two of the three issues were off. Black & Veatch indicated that the power usage was about $15,000 a year more than Paul had proposed, and the chemical usage was about $3,000 less per year than was proposed. So it was a net of about $12,000 per year extra cost that the district would have had to absorb. So based on that, and that was an analysis that was done in response to Paul's analysis, I've sent that back to Paul, and they have yet to respond to me back on whether they concur, agree, disagree, different math, who knows, whatever. The resolution of that will be getting back information from Paul, which I don't have yet. When I do get that back, I will sit down with Paul and with Black & Veatch, and we will negotiate some sort of settlement for the difference, whatever it might be. And that's the way the contract is outlined.
Thank you.
All right. Anything else on? Yes, Mr. Wallace.
Dina, I wonder if it would be beneficial information, and tell me if it's too much trouble, that we maybe add a line onto the to your monthly operations report on the water deliveries for the downstream releases, so that we could see a cumulative downstream release as we go through the year, kind of separate from digging it out from other reports.
Yes, I can do that. I am having a difficult time, as you may look
on your
report. You will see we have a negative loss, which I'm not sure what that actually means. We still haven't resolved that yet. We're trying to generate these reports based on the SCADA system, which is the data processing and information accumulation electronic system that the plan is, so that my staff doesn't have to run around doing things by hand. The releases are 3.5 million gallons per day. That's where we are right now, and intend on keeping those unless we can reduce them or we have other issues. But I would like to see a cumulative report for that also, John, so I'll try to get that implemented. I'm still working on this report because you see there's a lot of blank lines here that we need to adjust.
Yeah, it seems like it could go right underneath the domestic deliveries where we have our entitlement of 4530, but then the 4200 for the downstream releases could be below that, so we could get a total picture of what was taken out of the reservoir.
Right. And I think, yeah. And so we need to modify this. I'll try to get that done for the next meeting.
Thank you.
Good idea, Mr. Wallace. I had that on my mind also. And if I'm reading these numbers halfway correctly, Mr. Benedicts, we're 440 acre feet over safe yield this year?
I would say that's probably correct.
Okay, thank you. And anything else on operations before we go into no surplus water from anybody? All right, Mr. Benedicts, you're on for no surplus water.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm not really sure the way that reads there, but actually it's a declaration of surplus water, but it's not, so that's why I labeled it that way. As I alluded to just a few moments ago, every year the advisory group is to make a declaration of what the status of the water is in the system, so some may be available if there is surplus water for agencies to use. That's a formula is basically based upon, as I said, the safe yield less the safe yield, if there's any balance of water remaining between what the contract agencies have been provided and what the environmental releases have been. And it's a little bit complicated because it's based upon spills through the spillway if we have excess water. And in this year, obviously, we haven't had any spills, and we've used more water than our safe yield. So the recommendation is that we make a declaration of no surplus water.
Comments? Anybody got anything they want to talk about before I go off on Mr. Benedict's? You know, I do have a couple of comments. If you go back to, Mr. Wallace.
No, I have a comment too, so go ahead.
If you go back to 1995 and earlier in the project history, and you look at that period between 1969 and 1995, I think you'll see that we had on average about 600 acre feet a year of surplus water available for the agencies, and that was an important benefit, and it was an important financial benefit for the agencies. And today, can you imagine how much less constrained you might be if we had 600 acre feet more water to utilize? The difference is, of course, in that period, we didn't allow flows to go past the 22nd Street Bridge in Oceano, and so we're constrained by the resource agencies, apparently, to allow more water to go down the creek to provide for environmental benefits. I kind of wonder whether we're on the right path in not pressing the environmental agencies more than we are, in that the amount of water we are releasing downstream and the effect on our safe yield is really quite serious. I mean, we're sitting here today at 400 acre feet over safe yield. Should we not do something? Should we not take a stand? Not only from the amount of water that our citizens could use, but look at the cost that they have to bear to buy new supplemental water or marginal supplemental water, what the cost of that water would be to replace this 600 acre feet. So I'm really wondering whether the committee is as concerned as I am, and if not, perhaps we can move on. But if you are, maybe we should talk about a solution.
Well, I'm not sure I know enough to be, whether I should be concerned or not, but certainly if something can be done to minimize the amount of water we have to let flow down in the streams, we ought to address it somehow, some way. Would that be a lawsuit? Would that be more forceful with the negotiations? I don't have anything to recommend, but I like your idea, though, Mr. Gary.
There we go. Did anybody hear that?
Well, go ahead and do it again.
I'm just agreeing with what Jim said about we need to do something about the environmental water going downstream. If we're letting out more than we need to, and we need to address that somehow, some way, and see about trying to save that water for ourselves and for future use.
Mr. Wallace.
Well, that kind of leads back to the address, the interim release program, and how we're attempting to comply with the regulatory agency's requirements that we release a certain amount of water. And there's a memo, of course, in our package that speaks to some of the history on that. But it seems like that in looking at the releases that have been made, that it's a function of really a month-to-month thing, and trying to replicate what has happened in the past and mimic the actual old operation of the creek before the dam was there. And I know that that is contrary to what the Fish and Game and Fish and Wildlife folks have said, but I don't know if we need to look back at that with Stetson or our other folks who have modeled the historical operation of the creek, so that we trim our...
the district. Founded. To have also. I don't.
The cities. Especially.
With somebody. fact, he's and they determine. This is
that in the state.
Sir.
Requirement for
definitely. Line to 20. District help them. And you're reading. Certain limits.
internal prior to the call.
Sorry, one follow-up. Can
once we point. Please.
afterwards.
I've got a couple. Though it hasn't. Again. They feel.
Next meeting. I don't know what.
be the next. But operate.
Safe here.
Another week. Goes back to the picking up. Is there any those.
annual that the down generation. Covered that. Become items. Final change. The
amount of money. We're working on. Beds.
Quarter. As of CPY.
Bugs me.
meeting should be
me what
thank you.
That we're information back. this month. Not all. $50,000.
Very good. Our intention. We're doing. We have project. So,
there's any steel. I'll go all
conditions. Yeah.
about. We are.